While the humanitarian crisis on the U.S.-Mexican border has not abated, the number of unaccompanied children arriving from Central America to turn themselves into American Border Patrol agents has seen a decline in South Texas, from a high of some 2,000 minors crossing the border a week last month to fewer than 500 children this week. But the highly charged politics of the recent flood of refugees continues to take center stage in Congress and in the U.S. media. President Obama's emergency request for $3.7 billion to meet the crisis that would pay for an increase in the number of immigration judges, Border Patrol agents, and new detention facilities has run into stiff resistance in the Republican-controlled House. Meanwhile, GOP Texas Governor and likely 2016 presidential candidate Rick Perry ordered up to 1,000 National Guard troops to his southern border in what many observers see as a transparent political stunt. The White House, in an effort to more directly deal with the source of the refugee crisis, has invited the presidents of Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras to meet with President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden on July 25th to discuss the surge of unaccompanied children fleeing these nations for the U.S. Your reporter spoke with Dana Frank, professor of history at the University of California, Santa Cruz, who assesses the recent arrival of tens of thousands of children from Central America on the U.S. border, placing the current crisis in the context of the extreme violence in Honduras and the role the U.S. has played in supporting that nation's corrupt post-coup government.
We don't have the smoking gun on U.S. provoking the coup, but it's very clear that the U.S. allowed the coup to stabilize. This was in 2009, 5 years ago, June 28th. It recognized the post-coup dictator Micheletti as a legitimate equal to the post president. It recognized the elections that happened under the initial post-coup regime that were boycotted by almost all the Honduran opposition and almost all international observers, except the Republican Party of the United States refused to observe the elections. So the United States immediately recognized the outcome of that election even before the polls had closed and acted as if the subsequent administration, the post-coup regime of Porfirio Lobo, was a legitimate government. And that's when the U.S. had this fiction for years. In fact, the U.S. briefly suspended some but not all military agents in Honduras during the immediate post-coup period, but in every year since that we have documented, and of course there's no transparency about much of the funds, but as much as we can tell, and certainly in the public record, the funds for the Honduran police and military have in fact increased every year since the coup, despite widespread documentation by the UN, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, you name it, of this vast criminality and corruption by the Honduran state security forces. So the U.S. has a direct responsibility here. They've been operating under the fiction that this government is somehow improving itself when it's clear that they're just feeding the beast, as the rectora of the university famously said when the police killed her son. She asked for a cutoff of the age. She said, "Stop feeding the beast." Well, we've just actually fed a beast that's becoming a more and more dangerous monster. And so what's happening now is suddenly we're acting like there's just random violence and gangs down there when we have, in fact, helped create the situation. We've legitimated the government that is continuing to countenance and even encourage this situation and is, you know, just robbing the government coffers blind as we speak. I mean, there's lots of other things going on here that government is doing that are terrifying, including attacks against human rights defenders who try to document what's going on. So what's amazing is how entrenched, more and more entrenched, the State Department and the White House have been, despite tremendous congressional opposition. The congressional opposition up until maybe a month ago was getting stronger and stronger, and most recently 108 members of Congress, which is a huge number for any kind of letter, wrote a letter to Secretary of State Kerry questioning U.S. support for the regime. Just over a year ago, 21 senators challenged Kerry on the human rights abuses by state-funded security forces, and that's very unusual with top leadership, and the State Department's just been blowing that off. I mean, what's really scary is now with this kids crisis, the Obama administration and the White House in particular has just asked for $18.5 million new money for the Honduran police to supposedly clean it up as a response to the flight of the children, and this is really scary. It's like the government of Honduras is being rewarded for chasing its children into a terrifying circumstances of migration across Guatemala and Mexico.
What could the United States do now to positively influence the dismal and dangerous current situation in Honduras from your perspective?
I mean, first of all, we can't add to even further militarization of our own border. We have to talk about how our policies have created this situation. It's not something that we're going to change overnight. So first of all, we have to stop celebrating the governments of Guatemala and Honduras as if they are our viable partners. We need to respect the work that the new government of El Salvador is going to be doing to try to address its own military and police and their corruption and the gang problem in El Salvador. But we also, I think, have to talk about the economic roots of that, which we haven't talked about, because there are policies of both the Honduran government and the United States government that are actively and at this moment creating more poverty, because they're not, these kids are not just fleeing violence, they're getting up in gangs because there are no jobs, and that's another reason for sending your kid out of there, because there's almost no, there's very tiny viable economy. So practices by the United States, such as the through the International Monetary Fund and the Inter-American Development Bank and the World Bank, have actively supported privatizations and layoffs that destroy good government jobs. There's a recent statement from the International Monetary Fund Executive Board saying, we're helping the Honduran government lower their wage bill. I mean, bawled about this. And also the Central American Free Trade Agreement is destroying the ability of small farmers and Honduran manufacturers to compete in the market, because they have to compete with U.S. agribusiness and U.S. corporations. And that's destroying jobs in the manufacturing sector and the ag sector. So the U.S. has to stop acting like these kinds of economic policies are not destroying jobs.
How do you explain the Obama administration really continuing on these failed policies that are sure to backfire in the coming years?
Why is the U.S. doing this? Of course, we don't know. It's really this rear guard military reaction to democracy in Latin America. Is it about protecting U.S. economic interests? Honduras has always been the most captive nation in Latin America of the United States. Or are they playing for a long-term war with China, which is investing in Latin America, but not military at all? Or is it just that the military is an engine that runs of itself? I mean, but certainly for whatever reason of those, we need to be challenging it.
That was Dana Frank, professor of history at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Find links to articles and resources analyzing the refugee border crisis on our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.